Hello, and welcome to another Previously in Europe. This week, unfortunately, Ciarán is very sick, and we were originally planning to record some holiday episodes while we're travelling over the Christmas week, but unfortunately, due to Ciarán being sick, we're going to have to take a week off instead. So I'm going to have a quick solo episode for you now, and then we'll be back in 2 weeks. So today I wanted to quickly and in some detail talk about what is happening in Belgium. I know some people would like to talk about the continued French protests or other important things happening in the world, like, oh, I don't know, Kosovo's army, Italy's government being terrible, etc., all the confidence votes, Brexit. But we're not going to talk about that now. I'm going to talk about Belgium. Belgium, yes. So, the first Michel government is dead. Long live the second Michel government. Or is it really the second government? People are actually unclear on that, and as we'll get into briefly now, it's actually causing some problems. So now there is a minority government in Belgium. But technically, like on a wild technicality, the Prime Minister didn't offer his resignation to the King of Belgium. So the King has just given him permission to reshuffle his cabinet. And therefore, the government is technically a reshuffle, despite losing its largest partner. So the government is now the reformist movement from Wallonia, Open Flemish Liberals and Democrats, and the Christian Democratic Flemish Party. Guess where those last two are from. This is after the New Flemish Alliance, or NVA, quit the government over the signing of the UN Migration Treaty, or rather, Michel's insistence that he would go forward with his promise to sign it, that he had already made at a UN speech during the summer at the UN meeting where they drew out this migration treaty. Well, treaty is a strong word. Compact is the technical term of what it is. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. But this is actually quite a big problem because the New Flemish Alliance made up 31 of the 83 seats the government had out of a total parliament of 150. So they had a slim but, you know, comfortable enough majority of parties that agreed on like a reasonable amount of stuff. The New Flemish Alliance made up a large chunk of that. Not a majority, but a big chunk. So they're now down to 52, which isn't close to a majority. It's, you know, just over a third. So this might strike some people as confusing, because in a lot of parliaments, this would mean that there wouldn't be a government anymore because the opposition would take down the government, or there'd be a brief period of back and forths to try and keep the government together, but it would probably fail. Or there'd have to be some sort of confidence and supply deal. This is complicated. So that's not how it works in Belgium, since some constitutional reforms in 1993, constitutional scholars basically disagree as to whether or not, like, it depends whether or not this is technically a new government. It depends on whether or not a confidence vote in the parliament needs to be had. Otherwise, it's up to the sitting government whether or not they have one. This was largely to make the government system more stable, but some constitutional scholars are saying that this is clearly a new government because, you know, 31 of the 83 left, and you had to replace a bunch of ministers, and there's now an entire party not in it anymore. But the actual government itself is saying that no, we're the same government as before. No confidence votes are needed. So if this stands, which it seems like it's going to, then any vote of confidence would be voluntary, and they're just going to run a minority government that I guess won't be able to get much through, unless the opposition parties, who are calling for a vote of confidence in the parliament, or effectively the government to present themselves as the government to the parliament, are probably doing that in vain. But this doesn't really matter to a certain extent, because there are elections in May anyway. So the way this has been set up after the sixth round of reforms on the Belgian Federation, they now hold their parliamentary elections for the federal parliament on the same day as the EU parliamentary elections, and then the term is 5 years. So late May is once the date is set for the EU Parliament elections. That'll be the date for the Belgium elections, unless there are snap elections, in which case there will be it hasn't come up, but if there was a snap election, it would be only until the previous five-year term was over, it wouldn't mean that after that snap election, another 5 years passes, the elections are still supposed to line up with the EU Parliament elections. So basically, if they had a snap election, you know, immediately, they would have to have new ones in May anyway, so the it wouldn't really be a long-lasting it would be a big embarrassment, but it would be kind of it would potentially rile up a lot of the public, making them have two elections or damage turnout in the second one, for instance. Anyway, this 5 year term setup came after Belgium became the country probably with the longest running in the world no government but in negotiations to form a government situation in 2010, where for that year they couldn't form a government and it took like 500 days or something to form a government. So this was set up basically to discourage people from doing that and to make it a fixed setup, as opposed to just, oh, we could just keep having elections, for instance, like they did in Spain. So how is that election looking, and like, would it make sense to have snap elections? So the NVA, the party that left the coalition this week, or this day last week, are on a polling high. They're polling, you know, sometimes 10% better, 5 or 6% better is more usual than what they were polling in the last election. The most recent one has them at like 26 or 27%. They had 20% in the last election, so that's pretty good. Again, the Belgian Parliament is very fragmented, so that'd be pretty good turnout for them. But then the remaining coalition partners are also polling fine. Michel's party itself, the Reformist Movement of Wallonia, is polling around 16%. They only got 9% in the last election, which I might seem strange that he's the Prime Minister, but that's the way more fragmented parliaments often end up working. You get a consensus candidate as the Prime Minister, or kind of whoever can form the negotiations together. But of course, until then, they're in a minority government, so they wouldn't actually want to have a snap election, even if it would mean a small seat gain for them, because they would end up then having to actually renegotiate a government, and they might not be able to do that. The king might not give the first round negotiations to them. It'll all become... Basically, they'd probably lose out if they had another election. They didn't want to have one now. So for people not familiar with Belgian politics, like, so Michel's party is kind of like liberal-conservative, kind of centre-right, kind of pretty standard sort of European mainland conservative-y. NVA is not. They are a Flemish nationalist party. They sit with the British Conservatives in the EU Parliament, the British Conservatives being the party that like half of them orchestrated to leave the EU. So they want a separate Flemish state. They're very free market economics-y kind of geared. They're very pro tax cuts, etc., like harsh tax cuts. They want a lot of devolvement of powers to the Flemish state government, away from the federal government, which happened in the previous reforms I mentioned anyway. But they do want EU membership. They're not Eurosceptic. So it's kind of it's a mixed bag. It's not like typical for not like a super far right party, because for context, there is a party to the far right of them who are the kind of allies of Le Pen. They have one MEP, but they are very extreme, and I would say they're just the anti-EU and generally racist party. I don't really need to talk about them anymore. Why the NVA left the government over this UN treaty. The way this is complicated is that, well, so they were in government, but they didn't have a strong enough position, or the Prime Minister's position itself, to argue to not go sign this agreement to the UN. Also, they went in the position in June they weren't really pushing this as a strong position to hold, when it looked like in June that if they went against it and really, really wanted Belgium not to sign it, it would have been Belgium and the US and basically nobody else not backing this, or not following this text in some way, or indicating that they would potentially be convinced into signing this agreement later. So that really wasn't really on the card. So then you had Michel went to the UN and gave a speech in support of this. So the NVA then came out saying that they were going to vote against this when Michel brought it to the parliament for a vote. but it passed the parliament. So because the NBA didn't have a majority of the parliament who didn't want to pass this, but they also, and they didn't have a majority of the actual government itself either, because the rest of the government parties, who, as I mentioned earlier, are the majority of the government, did want to sign it. Originally, the NBA said that they weren't going to quit government over this, but that they seem to have gone back on that and left anyway. And Michelle effectively had to just replace their cabinet positions. So yeah, this is it was kind of an odd setup, because effectively they were in the catch 22 of, they didn't have the votes in the cabinet to go against this, or the votes in the parliament. So instead they just quit the government. It didn't really seem like a great way either way. They're kind of just now saving face to a certain extent. They've obviously made the political calculus that they could not be in government for, you know, until May, and then they're gonna probably be the biggest party in the next election, as they were in the last election. But so they'll probably be in a good position to form a government potentially, or to get into negotiations to form a government. It'll be complicated either way. So yeah, what is this UN migration pact, and what is the NBA's problem with it? That this is kind of a more complicated question, because as I mentioned previously, in June, the US was basically the big player saying that they weren't going to sign it, whereas now you have Austria, Hungary, Australia, a couple of South American countries, Brazil now with their new fund president is saying that they're backing out of it as well, despite the previous administration being very for it and, you know, being involved in drafting it. But kind of their like hubbub about this is very much, so they were basically just not going to sign any international agreement that was relating to migration at all, because it would always be seen as concessions by a lot of their supporters. So like a lot of the analysis around why was the US so against this, and it's effectively Trump generally doesn't like international agreements at all unless they're like somehow arguable, it's arguable that the US is like the main beneficiary of this in some way, whereas the main beneficiary of this would be migrants, like migrants of any sort. But like a lot of the problem, like criticisms of the text, is that it's incredibly vague, and it's doesn't distinguish between refugees and economic migrants. But that is kind of the point of it. It's a UN migration pact compact. It's not a actual treaty that is binding in any way. It's incredibly non-binding. It's incredibly vague. A lot of the language is stuff like agreeing to gather anonymized data to accurately track migration. It's not specific, like you have to do something. Angela Merkel's point about this effectively was, you're not agreeing to anything. It's, you're saying that it would be a good idea if we did all these things. And a lot of that is, it probably, so for instance, like gathering lots like good anonymized data to have an evidence-based back and forth about like how best to target migration, like migration even in a preventative way, would be going against what a lot of their politics is peddling bullshit and fueling nationalist tendencies. So having more evidence potentially to show even small decreases in migration would, or to show migration isn't the problem necessarily that they say it is, or solutions that are promoting integration of migrants isn't really what the NBA want. So, and it actually, you know, potentially them agreeing to this and being in government would have fueled their further right. I'm not really that much further right, really. The NBA is not great, but you know, they're contending against a racist Flemish party who are like even more racist than the NBA, so that's fine. Yeah, so that's Belgium in a nutshell at the moment. It's probably going to truck along with a minority government because of the slightly unusual quirks of the way the Belgian constitution has been reformed over the years to make the government more stable. Because Belgium is a, you know, hodgepodge of multilingual, for instance, the NBA are very pro having only dealing with the federal government through Dutch, whereas Michel's party is like from a French-speaking region, so it's kind of complicated anyway. So you do need a quite like strong government stability measures, and what you've ended up with is possibly this weird quirk where there will be a minority government, but only till May, and then there'll be an election, and then there'll probably be a months long back and forth as to whether or not they can form a government. But we will see if they can break their record. I wouldn't bet on it, but you know, maybe. Cool, so that's the podcast for this week. Apologies again for the solo episode, but Kieran is very unwell. We will be back in 2 weeks with an episode of some description. I'm not sure what yet, but at some point we're gonna try and do a serious rundown of where the EU elections for 2019 are in terms of polling, kind of how, like, an overview of how they work, what the plan is for the UK, etc. So that'll be fun. I'm not sure if that'll be in 2 weeks. It depends on whether or not fun news or not so fun news happens in the intervening weeks. So thanks for listening. Thank you.